Welcome back to the Keeping It Real podcast with Chris Norris. I am excited again to be joined by another special guest today. Today I have Tessa Simmons. She is the assistant principal of Valley Grove Elementary School, part of the Valley Grove School District in Franklin, Pennsylvania. Tessa is also a friend of mine, so I'm excited to be able to talk today one-on-one with her about the world of education. Tessa, how are you?
I'm good, Chris. Thank you. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for being a willing participant to share about the crazy world we're living in regards to education. For those of you that might maybe be listening to this episode months or years later, we are in 2020. We are in the midst of a pandemic and nobody knows what's going on with the school districts. And are we going back? Are we not going back? And it's a super sensitive subject. But I wanted to talk to somebody that's kind of entrenched in it on the daily, such as yourself as an assistant principal. And I put a message out on Facebook and lo and behold, Tessa was more than willing to talk in hopes to clear up some questions that people have. She also is a mother, so she knows where people are coming from with all the questions and concerns about what our world looks like in a month. So Tessa, before we get into the nitty gritty of everything, tell us a little bit about how you got to the position you're at as the assistant principal at Valley Grove Elementary.
Okay. So I've been in education for 11 years. My first 10 years, I was a teacher in the West Middlesex Area School District. I taught kindergarten, first grade, second grade, sixth grade, high school algebra, a little bit of everything all over the place. I obviously pursued my master's in curriculum instruction, and then I went on for my principal certificate. So I was actually hired by Valley Grove this past school year. So this was my first year as an administrator. And when I kind of finally felt like I was in the groove and I knew what I was doing, then March happened. And all of that obviously went out the window, you know, for myself and everyone else on the earth. So that's how, you know, I got to where I was, but I still love my position. I love the decision that I, you know, made to go into administration. And obviously all those past experiences that I had as a classroom teacher and teaching different grade levels, I believe helped me to understand what I was doing now in the job and how to handle teachers in certain situations and things like that. I don't know if anything I've done could ever prepare me for COVID, but I think it's a learning experience for all of us. So,
of course. Oh my gosh. That's a great way to put it. Nothing could prepare you for this. Yeah. All the schooling, you know, you're well-educated, you've been through a lot, but they don't teach you this in school, as they say, huh?
They don't.
So tell us a little bit about Valley Grove. For those of you that might not be familiar with Valley Grove School District, tell us a little bit about your district.
Okay, so we're a small rural school district, you know, nestled in the mountaintops, like I said, in Franklin, Sugar Creek Borough, Rocky Grove, obviously. We have our elementary school, which is K-6, which houses 416 students. The high school, Rocky Grove High School, is 7 through 12, and it houses approximately 430 students. So we're a little on the smaller side, but I love it. Very close-knit community. We have about 60 staff members in the elementary and right around, I think, 40 or 50 in the high school. Our mascot's the Orioles. Our colors are black and orange. It's a very nice, close-knit community, honestly. Like, I really enjoy being a part of it, and everyone's been very welcoming, and yeah.
Awesome. So you're new to the district, fairly new to your position, and you're kind of, you know, baptism by fire, if you will, right?
Yes.
Into a global pandemic, and, you know, you are dealing with that on the day-to-day operation side of things, running a school. Tell us a little bit, I guess, about if we start with the shutdown. What was kind of the biggest struggle when, like you said, March came around and it was like, oh, this is like real, this is happening. What was the shutdown process like for you guys?
Well, honestly, we, you know, kind of got wind of something possibly happening that week. But I mean, nothing was definite. I know some schools were kind of working on plans, some schools weren't. And it was kind of like, you know, obviously the biggest struggle was the unknown. It was like, you know, what's going to happen? When is it going to happen? You know, what are we in for? And I remember sitting in, we were in an admin meeting that Friday during the shutdown, and we were watching we were in a Zoom meeting at that time, and our guidance from PDE was kind of like schools needed to be the judges and kind of come up with our own plans and determine, you know, what was best for us compared to other districts. And we were kind of at a loss because it, you know, we felt like we weren't medical experts. We really didn't know, you know, what the best decision was. Like, do we take the initiative to shut down? Do we wait for the state to call it? I don't think 2 hours after that meeting was when Governor Wolf actually, you know, said, okay, schools are shut down indefinitely. We went back to the school and we were actually going to hold a faculty meeting right after school to kind of let our teachers know what was going on. And it was during that meeting when he made that announcement. So we were going in and not really knowing what even to tell the teachers because we felt like we didn't get, you know, a whole lot of direction at the time. And then school was canceled anyways. And it was kind of like, you know, the teachers weren't sure, you know, should they be bringing materials, help them? Should they start preparing things now? Like, you know, what should we do? What does this, you know, what does this look like? When are we coming back? And, you know, we didn't have any answers. It didn't seem like, you know, the Department of Education had many answers for us. It was honestly just that unknown. And I think this whole shutdown, it has just been the unknown has been the biggest struggle. Because at first it was, okay, maybe we'll stay closed for 2 weeks or, you know, maybe not. Or should we begin instruction or should we continue with review and enrichment? Do we allow the teachers in the building? Do we have them stay home? How do we feed students? You know, all those things that, you know, goes into just the day-to-day routine. It's like, how can we possibly mirror that at home for these kids and still maintain that connection with them? So it was a lot of the unknown, a lot of the, you know, are we doing the right thing? You know, is this what our district should be doing? How is this obviously impacting our students? How is it impacting our staff members? So that was a really big struggle throughout all of this, was just not knowing what to do and if it was right or wrong.
Sure. One question I like to ask educators is, especially, I guess an assistant principal would be really a great question that I'd like to ask would be, How do you truly run a school, everything from the top to the bottom, from disciplinary to attendance to curriculum? How do you do that? I guess not how do you do it, because I think you said you're still figuring things out, but how difficult is it to run a school virtually, so to speak? Like, what was your day-to-day like, and like, what were some struggles and some things that you took away from that whole, like, this is probably your 850th Zoom meeting that you've had. So tell me about that process.
Well, it was a lot of Zoom meetings. It was a lot of emails. Honestly, I felt like, you know, you were just on call 24/7, where obviously during the normal school day, you could leave maybe by 4 o'clock and maybe respond to one email or make one phone call after that. But there was none of that disconnect. It was like everything just flooded over into your, you know, your normal home life. So, I mean, we were having different email chains going on at 11 o'clock at night. I know parents were reaching out, and I think so many people just had so many questions, and so many people, you know, wanted to make sure that they were doing the right thing and they knew what their expectations were. The staff wanted to know their expectations. The parents wanted to know what their students were expected to do. So there was a lot of questions going on during that time. We made a lot of social media posts during that time also. We have, you know, quite a big following on our Facebook page. So it was nice to be able to quickly share that information out there with the parents and still give them and the students obviously some form of connection back to the school. But honestly, it was just a lot of communication, and obviously not in-person communication. It was emails. It was, you know, obviously the virtual Zoom meetings were big, sometimes phone conferences, but it was just being available, unfortunately, 24/7, because you just didn't know what was going to happen or who, you know, needed assistance with something, or if the state was going to put out something new that we needed to kind of be on top of. So it was just kind of being available all hours of the day, honestly.
Sure. Sure. And it's, you're right. We're always connected now. And that has so many benefits in many ways, like you and I are able to speak today, but also, I guess in this type of circumstance, it was good, but at the same time, I'm sure it was taxing on your team to constantly know that you had to be available to clearly communicate details, updates, next steps. And it sounds like you did a great job doing that using, like you said, teleconferencing software like Zoom video, social media posts. things like that. This is probably more so than ever before, you communicating constantly with not only your team and your staff and your teachers, but the parents who are probably asking boatloads, rightfully so, of questions, which brings me to my next question for you. You are a parent. You are also stuck at home at this point with a home full of children. I've lost track of how many children you have now, but what was it like from that perspective, being a working mom and also a quote unquote home educator, if you will? Tell us about your personal, you know, take your teacher hat off right now, or I guess your principal hat, take it off and tell us about like what it was like for you personally.
Well, I do have four children, a two-year-old, my daughter Hadley was in kindergarten this past year, Regan was in third grade, and Blaze was in high school. So a nice little variety, you know, of ages there. First, I'll absolutely 100% give so much credit to my husband because he was working from home at the same time. And without him, we would not have been able to function as a family. I mean, we were tag teaming, helping the student, you know, helping our kids left and right. I guess they were our students, weren't they? Yeah. So honestly, like if I did not have him, there's no way I would have been able to survive. Because like I said, the hard part was that separation of home and work. And I felt like I got to a really good point this past school year where I could do that. I could leave school and I could come home and I could kind of, you know, turn off my principal hat and turn on my mom hat and really, you know, obviously be present and be with the kids and really enjoy some, you know, quality family time. Well, obviously when COVID happened and at first, you know, we were in the red, so no one was allowed in the building. We did have to work from home. I kind of felt like I was glued to my screen. I mean, honestly, all day, whether I was checking my cell phone or replying to emails or on a Zoom call. So, I mean, it was that constant, you know, always making yourself available and always feeling like I was, you know, obligated to reply, like have an instant reply for someone if they had a question or anything. So, I mean, honestly, it was a struggle. And I'm sure that, you know, many parents felt the same way where if they were working from home or even if they, you know, weren't working, but still going into that role of trying to help their child, you know, with whatever the online platform was or whatever the school district was having them do at that time. I mean, it was difficult. I mean, even for me as an educator, it was very difficult. And I, like I said, I could not have done it at all without my husband. So I'm so grateful that he was there to kind of step in when, you know, I'd say, honey, like I have a Zoom meeting, you know, can you help Hadley with her math or can you help her with this? And he was on it. So I'm very grateful for that. That helped me, you know, get through a lot of it.
Sure. Sure. It's a struggle as so many can relate to, I'm sure. You know, I can remember from my wife and I, our internet must have just been taxing because, you know, on overdrive, because I would be on a Zoom call meeting with like clients or recording a podcast maybe, and she'd be in there with like a classroom of students. And I'm like, something's going to just like blow up. Like, I feel like our modem is on overdrive.
Yes.
Burn up because, and then we got, you know, we're streaming Disney Plus for my son. It's like,
of course.
It was a strange time. And I would be lying if I said that, oh, my son, we nurtured his education and we taught him so much. I mean, he's only three, but still, it was full on survival mode, if I'm being honest.
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And it's like, I feel like so many people felt that way, where of course I would have loved to do all these little Pinterest parties and projects with my kids, but I mean that didn't happen. But I will say on the flip side of that, I mean we did try, especially after the first couple months where I think we were all just kind of running ourselves ragged. We really did try to start squeezing in some of that family time. You know, we did try to have a board game. You know, we were playing board games. I can't tell you the last time we played board games, but we started playing board games, you know, in the evening, and it was like we needed that family time. You know, we needed that time to actually come together and, you know, and just have fun together. So we tried to squeeze that in when we could. So
absolutely. And I'm sure we could go off on a tangent talking about how important like this was for your family's health and well-being. I feel like for us, and we only have one child, it was the pause and kind of the reset we all need, you know, not at the expense of the pandemic and the people that were suffering. Luckily, like you had said earlier, it really never hit home for us or your family, but, it wasn't the worst thing to be able to spend a lot of time together. So I couldn't agree with you more. Now, fast forwarding a little bit to the beginning of the summer, school is over now. The students have officially kind of been released for the summer. You've been shut down for several months. When did you really start to get, you know, in the trenches, if you will, of saying, okay, what is our plan moving forward? I know the Department of Ed released some guidelines not too long ago. When did you guys really start to hammer down on coming up with some type of a plan, which we'll talk about the plan you guys have finally reached in a moment here, but tell us about like what your summer, if you want to even call it that, it's probably been kind of a weird summer, but what does it look like for you?
Well, we honestly started working on our plan at the beginning of June. In order for us to hold our summer school in July and for us to even start having like open practices for sports, we had to have a plan done and approved at our June board meeting so that we could, you know, obviously open up the building. So beginning of June, I mean, we sat in admin meetings for just hours and hours for, I'll say, probably 2 weeks straight, just kind of looking through all the guidelines, you know, picking apart everything that was put out there by the CDC and PDE and the Department of Health, and looking at obviously what the guidance was and how that could, you know, fit into our plan. What was nice was PDE did obviously send all the districts a template. So we were able to work off of that and plug in, you know, what we would be doing as far as sanitizing the building, you know, what social distancing would look like in the classrooms and the cafeteria. And they wanted us to put in there, you know, how it would look in the green phase compared to the yellow phase and all of that. So when we started this planning process, you know, initially it was just the admin team. It was the other principals. We have a high school principal, a high school assistant principal, an elementary principal, our special ed director, and then the superintendent and myself. So, you know, it was us, you know, sitting at the central office, just kind of plugging away at this plan. We kind of all took different sections of it. Then obviously we realized we needed more. And as part of the pandemic team, you needed to have obviously, you know, more people on there. So we have our facilities manager is a part of our team now. Our school nurse, we have school board members on there. We have parent volunteers, our athletic director, teachers, our transportation coordinator. We have a medical consultant from UPMC on there now. So we kind [S2] Wow. [S1] It was like kind of divide and conquer. Like we kind of took sections and then we brought it to the pandemic team to kind of look through and pick over and offer, you know, their input and advice and what they kind of thought would work or wouldn't work if we needed to change something. So it was honestly, you know, I think of Avengers Endgame and Captain America saying like Avengers Assemble, because honestly, like that's what it was. It was like everyone's going in, like hopefully this is the final battle and we're all kind of doing our part to hopefully, you know, come out successful in the end. But
wow. So it sounds like it was a ton of work and a ton of gray area is
yes.
I'm sure the biggest thing is it's like, you put all this plan together and in, you know, a heartbeat, it could change, which is, I guess, kind of the world we're living in right now where everybody's teetering on, you know, the unknown of whether we can even go, are we going to go back to yellow? Are we going to stay in green? You know, new mitigation efforts are always kind of being released. I know Governor Wolf in Pennsylvania released some not too long ago. It really changed things for a lot of people, but so far, nothing drastic has changed from an education perspective, just those guidelines that came out in June. Let's talk a little bit about what you guys have finally landed on. And you said that before we hit record here that you guys had a school board meeting recently and feel pretty good about the plan you've reached. Tell us a little bit about that plan, because it's probably going to be similar to some other folks who have kids in school. It's probably going to be a lot like theirs. What makes yours you know, unique?
So when we kind of devised this plan, our first step was obviously looking at the guidelines. Like we knew that there were things that no matter what, we had to follow certain things. Most recently, Governor Wolf, you know, put out a state mandate that masks are mandatory. And they even fine-tuned that to explain that they're still mandatory in school. So if school, you know, would resume in 2 weeks, obviously if this mandate's still in place, masks are obviously still mandatory. So We looked at all the guidelines, and then we sent out surveys to the parents and our teachers. And we wanted to hear first, you know, if they were comfortable coming back and in what capacity. So did they want to see the district have full online? Did they want to do more of a hybrid where we were physically in school for some days and working remotely other days? Did they want to come back fully? Did anyone feel comfortable with that? And honestly, the results from the survey, they were very eye-opening, but it gave us, you know, what we felt was a really good picture of what the community wanted. So what it came down to was we did have a large chunk of both parents and teachers that did not feel comfortable coming back full time. And obviously it's completely, you know, understandable. And our big thing is safety is absolutely going to come first. So if we know that there are many families out there and our own employees that don't feel comfortable returning yet, we did not want to force that on them. Now there was a good chunk that said that they would be fine doing some type of blended model where we would have only a portion of the students in the building for, you know, for a certain amount of days, and then they'd be working remotely. And we felt like that was the best option for us. And it also is giving us this chance to kind of practice what this could look like if this needs to happen again. So going into the school year, we decided that the first 2 weeks of school, we're going to be operating at a 25% capacity. So what that means is if I teach kindergarten and I have 20 students in my class, I'm only going to have 5 of them in school for each day of the week. Now, our first 2 weeks of school are 4-day weeks. So this worked out where, okay, I'll have a quarter of my class, you know, on Tuesday, I'll have another quarter on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And then the other days when those children aren't in school, they'll be working remotely. So we have district devices that we'll be providing to them, which we'll be distributing the week before school resumes. So if they're not in school for their 1 day, then they are working remotely. So that process is going to continue for the first 2 weeks. Then weeks 3 and 4, we are upping it to 50% capacity. So we are having half of the students there for 2 consecutive days. And then obviously they'll be off for the remainder of the week. Now those 2 weeks are 5-day weeks. So those students will be in school for 2 days, and then they'll be working remotely for 2 days, or for 3 days. So then the other half of the school will come for 2 days, and then they'll be working remotely for the other 3 days. So we felt like by using kind of this, you know, tiered kind of step approach, first, it's going to help us because we need to make sure that obviously we're keeping everyone safe. We want to make sure that our employees, our custodial staff, our maintenance, our teachers, everyone is following all of our safety guidelines and that they know what that looks like. Obviously, by having smaller numbers in the building, there's hopefully, you know, less chances that something could be contracted. It gives them more opportunities to work with students in a smaller setting where they can teach them what the safety procedures look like. Obviously, school is going to look a lot different now than how they left it in March. So it's a nice way to kind of transition them back into that. While they're in the building, they'll also be learning what their online school is going to look like. So they'll log into the platform, they'll understand where to go for the assignments. So it's going to be kind of an introduction to remote learning too, so that we can kind of troubleshoot some of those things. Back in the spring, And this was also something that, you know, we found out by the survey, parents kind of, they felt frustrated because it was kind of dropped on them like, hey, your child is now learning online. And here's how it is. And that's exactly how we felt too. I mean, we never taught the students what that looked like. We never taught them, you know, what Zoom was. We didn't tell them like what appropriate behavior in Zoom was or anything like that, like things that we didn't know we needed to teach them. And all of a sudden it was, hey, you know, now you have to go and do this. So we really want to prepare our students so that if they are working remotely, which they are those first 4 weeks, so they know what their expectations are. This time around, our expectations for the students are completely different. You know, back in the spring, it was kind of a whirlwind where it was like, if you were doing something, that's great. You know, we understand that families were in difficult situations. This was new for everyone, so we were very lenient. But the state is putting more pressure on schools now to make sure that we are providing instruction. So even if the kids are at home, you know, they need to understand that the expectations are different. You know, we're going back to our regular grading scale, that they are expected to complete the work. And it does count as a day of attendance for them also, which obviously we still have to turn in the state. So If all this works out, then on week 5, we plan on having 100% of our students in the school continue with obviously the safety and social distancing. But we thought, honestly, by easing the teachers back into it and the students back into it, that we could help to kind of meet all of those needs. Now, if we have some families that are interested in just completely staying online, that's an option too. So if they want to opt out of coming, you know, for coming in person at all, they can do that. They'll still be provided with a little orientation for what online learning looks like, because we do know there are a lot of families that still just don't feel safe sending their child, you know, back to school, and we don't blame them. So we wanted to offer something to them also, so that obviously they were still learning the school curriculum, you know, they could have a chance to kind of meet their teacher, whether it was in a virtual meeting or something like that, but they were still learning what the setup of, you know, the day-to-day routine in school looked like too. So.
Sure. Wow. It sounds like you guys have really mapped out a pretty comprehensive approach to sort of the reentry and reopening of your school. I'm curious though, is online learning has obviously rapidly had to evolve over the past like several months. I notice in your plan, there's a lot of things like troubleshooting for online learning, and obviously 2 to 3 days a week, once things get rolling, students will be doing online learning. You know, overall, how do you think everything that's happened in the past several months is going to shape the future of online learning? Because like you said, this is a new concept for a lot of people. Yes, there's cyber school and things like that, but you know, from higher ed all the way down to elementary ed, online learning is definitely a new option. How has all this shaped that? And as a former educator yourself, somebody who taught in a physical classroom for a number of years, what does that look like for you? And what are your thoughts on like the future of online learning?
Well, I think one of the big things was, I'll go back in the spring, the teachers were kind of handed a platform. PDE provided school districts with platforms. They gave Odysseyware for elementary and Edgenuity for high school. And it was kind of like these already pre-made lesson plans where you could just assign them to the students and they would check off if they completed them or not. Now, obviously, for that situation that we were in, I mean, it was an emergency situation. You know, we didn't know what to expect. We didn't have anything ready to go. It made the most sense. But I think some of the complaints during that time with those programs was there was that disconnect from school where it felt like the kids were just kind of logging in, doing an assignment, and it was done. And it was like, well, where does the school play a role in that? So our goal for this school year, we're not using the Odysseyware platform, and not that it was a bad, you know, platform, I don't want you to think that, but we wanted to do something that would be more meaningful to our students, but also our staff. I mean, they've invested so much time over the years into our curriculum that we wanted to make sure that you know, they were able to actually utilize it, whether those students were in school or they were obviously learning from home. So we're using a lot of our own resources that we have right now. So whether, you know, the child is in school or working from home, they'll be learning the same science lesson or the same math lesson, you know, the same reading lesson. Now, obviously, what that's going to look like is a little bit different. We've also explored different options. I think the one is called Screencastify, where we can actually show the teacher to the students working from home. So I think one of the biggest things that, you know, we've learned has to change is honestly how we still maintain that communication and that connection with those students that are working from home. I mean, we want to make sure that they still understand and that they feel like they're a part of the district, that they're a part of their classroom and their school. And just putting them down in front of a computer program doesn't do that. You know, something that they're just kind of working at their own pace, it's not motivating to them. You know, they don't feel like they're getting something out of it. I feel like the parents don't feel like they're getting something out of it. So we've realized that, you know, as educators, we do need to change what we're doing and how that looks for our kiddos at home. So we don't want to reinvent the wheel. We don't want teachers to have to create an in-school lesson and a cyber lesson. Like, we want those to be one thing, obviously, with just, you know, some minor tweaks and adjustments, whatever, you know, whatever they need to do there. But we want to do more with obviously involving those kids and still making them feel part of the school community. So that's definitely been, honestly, our biggest eye-opener during this whole process, was making sure that what we're doing is still involving them and that the teachers are having that active role in providing that instruction, and they're not just a monitor kind of watching to make sure they completed the assignments, but that they still have that investment in that child's education.
Sure, sure. That human connection that we still all crave, you know, even though we're separated by screens through all of this, you know, doing the best you can to still create that environment where there is still interaction, there is still communication. It's not just uploading an assignment, do it, and then post it back. There has to be, you know, this kind of conversation happening back and forth with teachers and their students, and students with their you know, their peers. It's just, it's such a weird time, but I think that sounds very, I guess it sounds very logical that you're trying to create that kind of environment for your students. It's not just about the assignments, really. It's about the whole experience that they get when they come to school. So I guess on that note, what are some of the things that you are concerned about as far as all of this stuff? This is a first kind of approach for you guys as far as the reopening plan. What are some of your concerns, fears, worst case scenarios? You know, I'm thinking of things not from an educational level as far as probably like where you said, I'm thinking of how are we going to keep everything clean? How am I going to keep a mask on my son? How am I going to make sure that my classroom, the kids are, you know, turning in assignments? All these questions that I feel like parents have probably bombarded you with at some point. How are you navigating all those?
Honestly, our motto has just become one day at a time. I mean, I think one of our obviously biggest concerns is that we are doing our part to appropriately train our staff and provide them with professional development. Like, we want to make sure that, you know, when September 1st comes, that our teachers are ready to go and that they're confident in what they're doing in their classroom and obviously with their students. I mean, we know, I mean, for anyone, change is hard. And this isn't just learning a new math curriculum. This isn't just, you know, trying a new lesson in your class one day. I mean, this is completely different from anything that any of these teachers have ever done, you know, before in their lives and their careers. So we want to make sure that they're prepared and that they feel confident. And honestly, that was one of the reasons why we went back to using our own curriculum, because we know the teachers know it. We know that they know it well. They know it inside and out. They know what their, you know, students need to know. So I think obviously preparing our teachers, and like you said, I'm sorry, there was a lot going on there. answering those questions with parents, like, we want to, and that's why we said we were hoping that by using kind of this transitional approach that we could prepare the kids and that we could prepare their parents with, again, what the expectations are and what they look like, and help those kids, like you're saying, teach those appropriate behaviors in school. You know, with one of the positives with having the smaller numbers, which I forgot to mention before talking about our plan, is if we only have 5 kids in one classroom, if they're socially distanced, they can take their mask off. So, I mean, looking at it like that, from that positive perspective, you know, starting off small like this so that school kind of does look normal for the kids, where they, you know, they're learning that they only need to wear the mask when they're entering or exiting the building or when they're in the hallways, you know, times like that. But when they're in the classroom, they can take their mask down. They can, you know, they can still kind of socialize with their friends from a safe distance. So still trying to bring some of that, you know, sense of quote unquote normalcy back to the kids, you know, as when the school year begins. And then obviously we just kind of have to watch and see where it's going to go from there. I mean, if we do have to shut down again, I mean, I know there's always talk about, oh, in October, November, December. But we at least want to make sure that we feel more prepared, which, I mean, at this point we feel like we will be. We want to make sure our teachers are prepared and that our parents are prepared so that they know what the expectations are in case we do have to shut down again.
Preparation. Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it. Just having people prepared, because I think everybody is kind of preparing for potentially this to happen again, especially when cold and flu season comes around. I mean, obviously there's a lot of mixed messages out there, but it's refreshing to hear that these schools like yourself at Valley Grove are saying, we've already accounted for that. We are preparing, hoping for the best, potentially preparing for the worst.
Exactly.
When you come home and you socialize with your friends, or you have a conversation with, you know, the people in your inner circle, again, kind of your teacher and administrator hat aside, how are you, I guess, encouraging? Like, you've clearly encouraged me and told me, hey, everything's going to be all right. Trust me, schools are doing the best they can. What are you telling people that are skeptical and saying, this is a disaster, it's going to be a complete catastrophe, I don't want to send my kid back? Like, what are you telling to comfort people?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, if if there are people that truly feel strongly about having your child go back, don't send them, keep them home. I mean, honestly, you know, and as a parent, you know, sending my children, obviously they go to a different school district than where I'm, you know, where I'm located. And that school district's plan looks different than what ours does. But we had to make that decision, you know, as a family of, for what's best for even our own children. So if there is a parent that just strongly feels like this isn't safe, I mean, talk to your school district. I mean, so many districts are becoming so flexible where they want to work with families. You know, they want to do what's best for the students, what's best for the family. You know, and if you do have families that are interested in getting back in, you know, we need to comfort them and say, hey, we're going about this, you know, the safest possible way. So like, you know, if I've talked to my inner circle, I've kind of told them something similar. Like if you're kind of hesitant, that's okay. Like that's your parental instinct kicking in and saying, you know what, something doesn't feel right. I don't feel right about this. I'd feel better with my child at home. Then keep your child at home. I mean, in our eyes, who knows how long this is going to last, but we're looking at this as just a temporary inconvenience. It's an inconvenience for, you know, the world right now. We're hoping that this doesn't last, you know, too much longer. But I mean, at the end of the day, you need to do what's best for you and what's best for your family. And if that's staying home, then stay home. If your children are ready to get back in there and you want your children to get back in there, then by all means, send them. And I think, you know, like I said, districts are being flexible where if you send them for a few weeks and you feel like that's not working out or who knows what happens in your personal life, then pull them out again and put them to online. So I think everyone just has to understand that this is a good time to just kind of have that flexibility and have those conversations. And I know the school districts, they want to help, you know, they want to do everything that they can to make sure that families feel comfortable and that obviously the students and the teachers feel comfortable. So I think it's okay to have those conversations and, you know, just make sure you're just asking the right questions and being honest without being too judgmental.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. It's really easy to vocally, you know, share your thoughts about all of this reopening process. But as you can tell, Tessa and her team at Valley Grove, like so many other school districts, are working so hard to make sure that they are prepared. That's the biggest thing I'm hearing here is being prepared, because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if you might have a 2-month plan and 1 month in, everybody shut down again, who knows? But it's certainly encouraging to hear from an educator such as yourself, Tessa, that you guys are, you're really planning for the best and hoping that students and parents and teachers can just kind of adapt and adjust. And I'm sure everything's going to be fine. I've got to ask you though, just kind of to lighten the mood as we close things out, are you happier to be an assistant principal through all this, or what if you were still a teacher? Like how does that work out? I feel like both would, I wouldn't want to be either, honestly, but how's that play out in your world?
Honestly, I've asked myself that question more than once. Like, did I make the right decision? But I truly think I did. I feel so blessed and so fortunate to have the administrative team that I do. I mean, we mesh together so well and we communicate, you know, together so well. And, you know, we kind of balance each other too. Like we're a nice variety of personalities where if, you know, if one of us doesn't see something, the other person catches it. So, I mean, we have the best working relationship. So honestly, being in this position and working with the people that I am right now, I mean, it's been the biggest blessing. And then obviously our goal is always to try to better our district and help our teachers and help our families and our students and everything. So being in this role, I've still enjoyed it. You know, I'm glad. I know that God put me in the right place and I made the right decision. So I am happy to be where I am.
Oh yeah. I'm sure that you are doing wonderful work and you are definitely where you're supposed to be, because it sounds like you and your team are the right people for this uncertain time. And I really do appreciate you being willing to share. Like I said, I didn't get a ton of willing participants because it's such a sensitive subject. So I admire your willingness to do this and hopefully comfort some people that are in my inner circle and even myself personally to know that, hey, this is going to be fine. We're going to figure this out as we go. And I do appreciate the work you guys are doing. While I'm not a part of the Valley Grove School District, it sounds like the folks that are in good hands. Tessa, if it's okay, I'd love to share. I'll probably just link to the Facebook post that your school made last night with your plan so other people can see it. Yeah, because I think it's really well done. I'm looking at it right now and I think it's great. So yeah, here's to hoping everything works out so well for you guys and that your students can transition back into a good school district with a lot of good people. Thanks so much for your time today, Tessa. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me. I think this was wonderful. And I hope that, you know, after this, I hope that some parents do feel better about, you know, what school's going to look like in the fall. And no matter what your school district decides, I hope everyone does understand that all districts, I mean, they have just the students' safety and the safety of the staff, you know, in the forefront of their mind. So no matter what the decisions are, whether some districts are leaning towards full online or trying to have everyone in, you know, I hope everyone does understand that they're not even just in our district, but in all districts. I mean, there was a lot of thought and a lot of considerations that went into these, you know, obviously difficult decisions. So.
Yes, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Before you go reading online, why don't you find a teacher and ask them what they're going through, or a principal, so you can get the facts straight. And that's why I'm so happy that you're able to give us your perspective today, Tessa. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it.